Welcome to The Freedom Line, the podcast for the Center for Individual Freedom, where we meet nonsense with common sense. Here's your host, Renee Giacchino.
Thank you for tuning in to the Freedom Cast. Joining me now is Sean Higgins. Sean is a research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, specializing in labor and employment issues. As a journalist, he covered the intersection of politics and economics for two decades, having been senior writer for the Washington Examiner, a Washington correspondent for Investors Business Daily, and a contributor to publications like Reason and National Review Online. It is our pleasure to welcome to the program Sean Higgins. Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So you authored a piece very recently that caught my attention as it relates to, obviously, what people are still talking a lot about is our lockdowns and these restrictions. And you wrote about how those lockdowns and restrictions continue to be a big impediment for leisure and hospitality jobs. And although we saw a little bit of a spike this summer, maybe seasonal, it's not trending in the right direction. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, as you said, partly this is seasonal. I mean, it's the coldest month of the year now, and that puts a bit of a drag on service jobs in any circumstance. But we've actually seen regression in that after the months of jobs recovery, even in that area, and it's a consequence of the lockdown itself. I mean, most this is confounded data in the Bureau of Labor Statistics survey itself. And people who can't find work are saying it's literally because their employers either can't hire them or went out of business completely, and it's the service industry that has throughout all this taken the brunt of this because it's the one that can't really adapt to a different model of thing. I mean, some businesses like restaurants can go to like a takeout model, but anything that requires actual interaction with people, whether it's theater, whether it's live performance, whether it's serving people at a restaurant, anything of that nature, or any resort type activity, just simply can't operate. And a lot of those businesses have gone out, died entirely. I mean, I'm certain all of your listeners know of local restaurants that they liked that just simply could not survive as a consequence of this. And they're reaching the breaking point where they simply can't find a way to keep going. Wait out the storm unless something changes, and that's what we're seeing is job numbers. That's one of the reasons why the numbers dipped for the first time in months.
So you say that they can't. We're seeing a lot of them shuttering, and they can't hold out any longer. I mean, and I'm hearing stories in San Francisco, for example, of restaurants that won't even serve people outdoors. Everything is exclusively takeout. I think there's some hope that now that, we're starting to vaccinate people, we may see some of these restrictions begin to be lifted a little bit. Sean, what is it we need to be doing? What should we be pushing for? Who should we be talking to about this?
It's a simple matter, I think, of getting, first off, vaccination stuff, under control. I mean, I'm certain you've seen some of the stories places where they have vaccinations, they've really had to dump them because they didn't have people to get to because logistics of it were all screwed up. But the other thing is, we need to recognize that there's an element of risk in all these things, and complete lockdown isn't always the best or optimal solution. I mean, there's health issues, but there's also economic issues. There's people are losing not just jobs or businesses, but mortgages. They're going bankrupt. I mean, there's going to be psychological impacts from this. There's, children are not getting educations. I mean, there's all sorts of ancillary spill-off benefits that are in their own way just as bad as the health things, and those need to be weighed against that. And I don't think, the constant, complete lockdown is always or optimally the best solution. There are other issues that need to be taken into account and put into the balance there.
We are talking with Sean Higgins. He's a research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, specializing in labor and employment issues. You can follow Sean at CEI.org. Sean, I want to pivot a little bit to a couple other things that you've written about lately that we're hoping you can educate us a little bit about. Word on the street is that President-elect Joe Biden is going to have Boston Mayor Marty Walsh in as labor secretary. Your thoughts on that?
It's the functionally the equivalent of, you know, just taking Richard Trumka, the president of the AFL-CIO, and giving the job to him. Marty Walsh is a president of his own labor union. He was part of a member of the Laborers International Union. He headed Local 223 in Boston. He was serving as the head of the labor union while also serving as a state representative. The only reason why he eventually gave up the position of running the union was because he had to as running as mayor. But throughout his entire time in the state house, he basically viewed his public office as a means to help his union and other unions in the state, and didn't sort of look at it as him having to serve the broader interests of taxpayers or the others in the community, and saw no conflict in this. And there's all likelihood that he's going to bring the same sort of mindset to position as labor secretary. In some ways, he's probably the most pro-labor person Biden could have picked, even above like more radical people like Bernie Sanders, because radical ideas have a way of being sort of self-limiting. You know, something that is particularly crazy, people will point it out. Walsh is much more subtle. He's a guy who's actually, you know, sat down at tables and negotiated contracts and that type of stuff. He knows the ins and outs of it. He knows the things that attract attention and don't, and he's more sort of patient in terms of what he wants. So he's much more likely to sort of get a lot more accomplished than somebody like Sanders or some other more radical person would. So that's sort of the issue there. And on top of that, the administration has announced that it wants to push through the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, which is a law that would radically change a lot of the main labor laws covering the country. It would literally eliminate every right to work law that exists in all 28 states that have them. It would essentially put the entire country under a version of California's AB 5 law, restricting gig economy jobs by requiring them to be listed as employees, not contractors, even though, you know, voters in that state actually rejected that law in a ballot initiative last year. A number of other things that are a bit more technical, but nevertheless amount to basically making it a lot easier for unions to organize and essentially putting a lot of people in unions, even if they don't necessarily know it or want it. And because he's just simply out to increase union power because he's that guy.
Well, definitely something we all, you know, should be leery of and pay attention to, and we'll be watching that. And maybe, you know, we could hold out some hope that the power that he will yield as labor secretary, you know, doesn't come to fruition as you've suggested, you know. And you know, I really like the analogy that you gave of, you know, if it were a Bernie Sanders, you know, even the radical ideas might not get through. So we've got to be, you know, very leery as I think you've indicated. One final thing before I let you go, I'd love to hear your thoughts. You know, I know that a lot of people were sitting on the edge of their seats, the Uber seats, the Lyft seats, specifically waiting for the Department of Labor to issue rulings on limiting workers' freedom and what it means to be a contractor versus a regular employee. And I believe that decision came out recently and you wrote about it. Can you educate us on that?
Yeah, what the Labor Department did was it put out a new rule under the Fair Labor Standards Act, which defines the difference between a contractor and an employee. An employee is just simply a traditional worker, and all the regular laws that apply, like overtime, unemployment, health insurance requirements, apply to those things. A contractor is not an employee, but still somebody who does work for somebody. Legally speaking, they're considered a separate business. Basically a business unto themselves. A contractor is just another term for freelancer. The advantage of being a freelancer is that they're not, most of those laws, because those laws don't apply to them, the work can be a lot more short-term. It can be a lot more flexible. You know, you only need to work like a few hours or at a time. You know, under a traditional employee thing, there's a lot of requirements that are put on the employer, which requires them to put a lot of restrictions on the worker. And basically to track things like overtime, unemployment, and all that type of stuff. And there was a push to make companies like Uber and Lyft traditional employers in that sense, because some lawmakers argued that they were sort of getting away with not having to provide these things. But the thing is, most people who, you know, drive for those types of companies or do this type of work only do it for very short periods of time. I mean, they typically work even less than a lot of part-time jobs. I have a good friend of mine who, you know, who is an entrepreneur who does a couple of other things, and he drives Lyft and Uber periodically just to round out his bills at the end of the month. But he does not view this as his job and does not want to be basically an employee of these companies. And there's a whole lot of anecdotal evidence that suggests this idea is very widespread. Most of the comments on the rule that came in to the Labor Department were from those type of individual drivers. They said, look, I only want to do this for a brief periods of time. Don't make me an employee and force the company to have to put me on a schedule that I either have to accept or deny if I want to do this at all. And these were, you know, individual people just writing in. They weren't like form letters, that nonprofit groups sometimes put out that people respond to. And you can sort of see those things a mile away. But this was actual individual people saying, look, please don't do it this way. And the department listened to them and said, okay, we're going to keep it so that the rules are pretty clear that if you only want to do it part-time for short periods of time, then that's what you're doing. And that's literally all they said.
Do you expect with Marty Walsh in that there may be, some backtracking on that, or do you think it's pretty safe? And I hear you because, like, I have a brother-in-law who's a school teacher, and he supplements his income driving Uber, driving Lyft, and it would be a game changer for him to be deemed an employee.
Yeah, it's almost certain that Walsh will try and undo this as soon as he gets in there. Basically, the way it works is once a law is passed, departments can issue rules explaining how they're going to interpret those rules, and a different administration, a different department can undo that. There's a long procedure that goes through. You have to dot all the I's across all the T's, jump through all the hoops. That's what the Trump administration just finished doing with this rule on contractors versus freelancers. The incoming Biden administration could basically do the same thing. It probably took like 2 years or something like that to do it, but they would like to do it. Because they just simply can. You don't have to run this past Congress or anything like this. You just have to go through the procedures. So in all likelihood, they'll probably do this. Now, it should be pointed out that this is a federal law, but states can supersede this in the same way that, like, a state can set a minimum wage higher than the federal level. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's the end. Other states can do it. The rule itself, if they backtrack on it, will almost certainly be challenged by a variety of these different companies, so it may end up in court. So it's not automatic what's going to happen. We'll have to wait and see. But assuming Walsh actually does get confirmed and put in there as Labor Secretary, yeah, you can probably bet he's going to try and undo this.
Well, we'll be watching that as well. Before I let you go, Sean, a sneak peek at what you might be writing about next.
I'm just sort of looking at summing up what the current outgoing administration did, particularly in this field of employment, and looking at some of the rules, like what we've been talking about, and then just looking forward to what's going to be happening with the incoming administration and what the likely secretary will be doing.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll be watching for that. Our guest has been Sean Higgins, research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, specializing in labor and employment issues. You can follow Sean Higgins and his work at CEI.org. Sean, thank you again for your time today. We greatly appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on board. Appreciate it.